also don't care about feminism. Your favorite show is Entourage.
To be honest, when I found out the patriarchy wasn't about horses, I lost interest anyway.
I wonder if I know what you mean.
I wonder if you wonder.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Maximum Film. My name is Alonzo Duraldi. Ify Wadaway is trapped in an inner circle of fault, a.k.a. the 134. But he's going to be here eventually. I just know it. But in the meantime, it's episode 344, and we're so thrilled to have you joining us. And also thrilled, of course, to have with us the Queen of the Midwest herself, super festival programmer and curator and newly crowned artistic director of the Bentonville Film Festival, Drea Clark. What's good?
Yay! Okay, so I went and ordered a set of graphite chopsticks, which is my overall what's good, because I was like, yeah, I don't want to get all these like throwaway ones. I mean, they're wood, so it's not the same sort of single-use plastic, but, you know, I really wanted to commit to my chopstick game. And then I got them and was like, you know, I've always been, I'm self-taught. I'm a self-taught chopstick user. And I'm from Minnesota, so you can just put those together as to just the ugliness.
You know, both go in one hand.
Yeah, right? There, it was just like this, just sad, whatever. So then I watched some YouTube tutorials, and literally till this very moment, so I keep a set of them, and now I just play with my chopsticks. Like, I like, gronk, gronk, click, 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 like while I'm watching things, and I want to become like that training part in Kill Bill where Uma Thurman is like, and like gets a fly with the single, like that's what I'm working my way to.
Are you going to do your hair up in a bun and use the chopsticks?
Let's not lie. I accessorized with chopsticks long before I used them as a utensil.
I would hope so. Okay.
Yeah. I'm feeling that's what's good for me is my chopstick game.
I am on board for all of this.
Thank you.
Hold one like a pencil. The other one does the moving. That's about as much as
yes.
I know.
I appreciate your support.
We go out of our way to have extraordinary guests on this program. And tonight's episode is no exception. So thrilled to have with us all the way from the Reading Glasses podcast here on Maximum Film, author, meathead, Mallory O'Meara. What's good?
Yay!
I'm changing my author bio to that. Author, meathead, book podcaster. What is good with me this week is that my hockey team has pulled into a very comfortable spot in the standings, and the playoffs are looking good. I'm a big Washington Capitals fan. I'm obsessed with hockey, and our season has been a little rocky so far. We had a lot of big injuries, but we are... looks like we're going to be finishing strong, and I'm excited for my beautiful, beloved sons to hit the playoffs this year.
I feel like I should be mad at you that you're not a Kings fan, but I honestly don't care.
I do like the Kings. I am fine with the Kings. They're not a team that I hate. I will root for them, especially when they're playing the Oilers, but my heart belongs to the Washington Capitals, so.
Fair.
I love them forever.
I recently had a what's good that was hockey related because my high school team made it to the state championship semifinals. And it was worth noting here. Yeah. And Alonzo gave me the same look he just gave you. So we're all united in that.
Look, I'm the one with the problem here. Like, I understand, like, sports means a great deal to a great many people. I'm just not one of those people. But that's
but this
on
is
me.
The meathead
it's not
episode,
on you're doing it right.
So.
That's
it
true.
Is, it is
that's
that true. This it's is fitting. True.
Alonzo, what's good with you, if not hockey?
If not hockey, I'll tell you. You know, anyone who knows me will tell you, I keep it bleeding edge. I'm all about what's next, what's around the corner, what is the culture not ready for yet? So I have recently gotten really into a little show. You might not have heard of it yet. It's okay. Called The Good Place. I'm hooked, frankly. Now I see why people have for years told me I needed to watch this show. And
are you fucking kidding me?
Exactly.
You just started watching that shirt now?
Yes. It finally came up in the rotation. And I get it. I am believing the hype now. I'm really enjoying it. So I'm all about The Good Place here in April of 2024.
I'm excited for you.
There is something to be said about watching a very buzzy thing when it's not buzzy. It feels like you can enjoy it at your own pace. So I get it. I understand I'll tell you, the weight.
I would do a Drea Clark style binge if I were not watching it with my husband, who will allot two episodes at a time max.
Oh, so man.
He's really making me savor. But it's worth it. I'm enjoying it. So, you know, it's all.
Oh, wait,
it's
all how far are you?
They just killed and brought back
Janet?
Janet, thank you.
Darcy, are you so season one?
Season one, yes.
Okay, I'm excited for you. Please keep us posted, because that is a show that has a large conceit that it has to stick around, that makes some really interesting narrative choices.
Yes, no, I know there's a lot of twists and turns ahead, and I'm trying not to find out about them as best as possible. So please, if you see me on the street, don't ruin it for me. let it be a surprise for me. Speaking of surprises, wow. We are getting ripped, jacked, and generally shredded with the hit new lesbian heist steroids saga, Love Lies Bleeding. And then we're going to have a quiz about movie titles that are also earworms. But first, it's time for It a Dick, yes, our movie news segment, where we take a look at the week's headlines and ask ourselves, is this important? Do I care? Kick us off, Drea.
All right. Actor Dev Patel is making his directorial debut in the action movie Monkey Man, and he took to Reddit last week so that fans could ask him anything. That online conversation revealed a lot of the challenges that Patel faced in making Monkey Man, from losing every filming location, to failing cameras, to having to re-glue breakaway tables together after stunt scenes. "Every day we faced absolute catastrophe," Patel said in a much hotter voice than I have. "But every obstacle provided us with a new opportunity to innovate. Is this important? Do you care?"
I'll tell you, I love that last quote, because that was actually the basis of an entire class I once taught, with the idea that basically that, you know, the things that seem like they're stumbling blocks can be turned into opportunities. And it's kind of cool to hear that this is a thing that plagues you, even if you are being produced by Oscar winner Jordan Peele. You know,
Jordan Peele. He signed on after they finished shooting. I'll just say, in terms of not putting that on his, the production elements on his back. The film premiered at South By, and Jordan and Monkey Paw signed on before that, but after production. This actually shot before COVID, or it was supposed to shoot before COVID, and then they lost their key location because the world shut down, and then they set up a production bubble in Indonesia and did all of their... So, when I looked at it, he shot for a long, long, long time, which is unusual for. So that's like if you're budgeting, obviously the more days you shoot, the more expensive it is. So then they were like, well, if we shoot longer days, but we make everything incredibly hard on ourselves during those days, like that's all of his quotes in this were very, very indie film, and it is a great way to find like your path as a filmmaker, to really kind of bring things together, but also the grind of that, I cannot express. Like, it is a physical pain to be doing that kind of production for that long. And I really hope, because everything, I haven't seen Monkey Man. I've heard great things about it. His references are incredible. I love Dev Patel as a star. I like this. He was having a lot of trouble getting cast in things that he found exciting, and no one was taking him on, especially for like an action star,
which is
so
nuts.
I do all of that. I know, right? I'd put him in anything,
including me.
Yeah. I'd put him in everything, and I'd start with myself. Yeah. I saw yesterday, that it was April 1st, and I saw an April Fool's posting of someone did a fake casting of Dev Patel and Ashley Simone from Bridgerton in Emily Henry's Book Lovers. And I was like, is that a thing? Oh, God, I hate April Fool's so much.
I think some April Fool's posts are actually, they're testing the water.
Yeah.
Like, would you respond? Are people into this?
I also care about this because they've been doing promos for this with the cast of me and Drea's favorite show, The Challenge. I looked on Instagram the other day and they had challengers talking about Monkey Man, and I was like, wait, are they in the movie? What is happening here? Did they just bring them in to talk about what is happening? But I'm excited for the film. I'm ready.
Yeah. I'm psyched for him. I hope the next movie he makes is funded more quickly and less of a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, we all hope that for everybody. And hey, speaking of movies, Ang Lee says, no thank you to 3D, that the industry is just not built for it. In an interview with IndieWire this week, the director behind everything from Brokeback Mountain to the high frame rate Billy Lynn's long halftime walk. Thank you. Together we'd get it there. Ang Lee says he is done making 3D films. This from a director who spent the last decade plus of his career experimenting with new filming techniques from 3D, as in Life of Pi and Gemini Man, to the aforementioned high frame rates. Lee's main beef is not with the format itself, but a system that's just not built to showcase it. He said, the theaters are stingy. It's really dim. You can't really see it. It gives you a headache. It's purely bad. You can't blame the audience for not liking it because it's bad, and they're asked to pay more money. When it gets good, people like it. It's simple. Is this important? Do you care?
See, I have a bone to pick with this, because, and I'm glad that someone is finally saying that 3D is bad, because as a glasses wearer, it is so uncomfortable to wear 3D glasses on top of your regular glasses. I don't know anybody who is like, ooh, a film in 3D, I have to go see it. You know, the film industry is in such a weird, chaotic nightmare flux right now. I just feel like that's not the thing we need to be caring about or trying for right now. But even if it was, again, I selfishly, as a person who wears glasses, like, I'm not sad to see filmmakers
especially
put down
there
that
was
baton.
That period where there were the ones that had like the batteries in
yes.
them that were extra heavy.
Oh my
those
god
those were my nose would have a mark for days.
Oh, it's awful.
Here's the thing. 3D has the potential to be awesome. And I'd say a movie like Life of Pi shows you, you know, like what you can accomplish using it. But damn if we didn't kill that golden egg, or that golden goose, rather. You know what I'm saying. After Avatar. Avatar made all that money. It was like, all right, 3D, we want everything's got to be 3D now, even if it wasn't shot that way, even if it's going to be rushed and look like crap. And you got, like, remember Clash of the Titans and, like, Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland? And it was like, of course, no one wanted that.
No.
But I hate to break the angle. I saw Gemini Man and Billy Lynn in the theater in high frame rate, and nobody wanted that either. So
yeah.
Let's just put that out there. But he's right. If you're... It should be saved for like a special event, the Avatar sequels, for instance, you know, where they're clearly going to like put the effort into it. And I'm sure every theater showing it gets that letter from James Cameron telling them where the lamp needs to be set and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, he's not wrong. You do it shitty, it just makes people never want to see it again.
Mm-hmm. And Ang Lee is... This is the person who gets to complain about it. It's not like me and my $3 budget's like, oh, I think 3D is more like easy.
Stereo,
easy.
Or the
makers of like Piranha 3D or something. Like, this is someone who...
Hey, Piranha 3D was good.
But this is a man who's like not just a tremendously accomplished storyteller, but he is someone who actively seeks out new technological innovations and
Absolutely.
Is trying them and doing all that. And that is all, it's a very fair thing to draw the line as an audience member or on behalf of audiences. And it's so true. If every filmmaker, like whenever we have at the festival and people want to do their tech check and like, oh, I want to see what's the color calibration or, and I was like, ooh, it is going to bum you out when you find out most people watch this on their phones, like in real life, you know? So there's that part of it, and I think 3D, when done well, can be a really magical, immersive thing, but it's so much dependent on where and how you're seeing it, and a lot of that is out of hands, and I fully agree with both of you that theaters are operating on something else. I do love the other thing that with Ang Lee, and we could interestingly tie this back to old Jodorowsky's Dune, is the main project that he's been developing for so long is a Bruce Lee biopic, and he wants his son to star in it. And so he was navigating like what formats and everything to do, and that was kind of one of the elements that brought him to this sort of crossroads. I think it's crazy. All right. Speaking of movies, but not really. Speaking of movies indirectly.
We'll get there, though, I promise.
The Billboard charts may be broken. That's what record store owner Matt Vaughn said in op-ed for West Side Seattle. That is because for the past few years, Penske Media has been the owner of both Billboard itself and of SoundScan, which is now called Luminate, the reporting entity that determines what songs land on the charts. Major streaming services report to Luminate, but physical media purchases are supposed to be accounted for too. While Luminate claims that 95% of independent record sales are reported for the charts, not a single independent record store owner Vaughn spoke to is reporting their sales to the company. And of course, all of this cycle and how they say and what they say people are listening to is the dragon everyone's chasing in their next choices. So is this important? Do you care?
Oh boy, howdy, yes. And I'm going to break it down to two things. So first of all, there's the fact that most of the people whose sales are now being reported for Billboard are like your Targets and your Walmarts, but also your iTunes and your Spotify. And so there's this notion now, oh, what, people aren't buying, you know, albums, they aren't buying CDs, and all, we just want digital. And the labels would love you to think that because it saves them money of, you know, producing the stuff and shipping it. But if you look at it, if you factor in the indie record stores that are now being shut out of SoundScan and Billboard, they're still moving that stuff like crazy. People do want it. They are buying it. And thankfully, the RIAA, the Recording Industry Association of America, remains a separate entity. And so they can tell you, no, no, this has sold X million, you know, albums or CDs or whatever. So it's not just about the streams. It's not just about the downloads. And that makes me crazy because this is the same logic that they keep trying to tell you. No one buys Blu-rays anymore. Nobody buys DVDs, but they do and they want them. And I think people want them more now that streaming services mm-hmm. have proven themselves to be such terrible sort of, you know, libraries or sources of reliability for movies that you want to be able to access when you want them. The other part of this is the Penske Media of it all, which is that they're a nightmare and that they own fucking everything now. My old digs at the Wrap is sort of one of the last of the independent trade publications in this country covering the film industry, which Penske both covers the film industry and is in it because they own production entities. They own Dick Clark Productions now, so they put on the Golden Globes every year. They bought IndieWire, so it's not even just that they're running, you know, Variety and the Hollywood Reporter, but they're also, you know, digging into like Drea's side of the street with this stuff. So anyway, it's all terrible, and don't believe it when people tell you that no one is buying albums or that no one is buying Blu-rays, because they are. It's just that people are manipulating it to make it look like they aren't.
And those things are so, oh, I'm so sorry, Mallory.
Oh, no, go.
I was just going to say, the reason the sales of it is so important, and I know I'm stating the obvious, but it is that idea of like the things that are successful and are making money are the things that they'll try and do and replicate. Like these are the successful movies, these are the successful franchises, this is the successful music. And if they're dictating what that is, it really limits the things outside of what they've said. And so it doesn't really reflect actual supply and demand. The whole structure is inherently flawed and a lie. And it completely bottlenecks what artistry is or culture or how we're, you know, noting the passage of time through our stories in the broadest of poetic terms. But those things bum me out so much. And it's so cyclical and so few people are aware of that. It's like a very like, the sky is falling. And they're like, what's the sky? Yeah. Mallory, what were you saying though?
I was going to say, as an author coming from the author world, I just don't, I wish I was more surprised by this. You know, at this point, any bestseller, any kind of list, any kind of chart, I take with a massive boulder of salt. You know, a lot of people don't realize like the New York Times list, the most influential best-selling book list, is a curated list. It is not like they look at numbers and then pick the top ones. It is a list that is chosen. It's very famously, people don't know what the algorithm is. It's like a kept secret at the New York Times, but you can sell enough books to get on that list and not get on there. So again, I wish that I was surprised by this. It just feels like every sort of yardstick we have for anything in any creative industry is corrupted in some way, flawed in some way. And I hope it changes, but it just seems like the world that we live in now. And it's very hard to, like you just said, get an accurate sort of gauge of supply and demand, what people are really watching, what people really want. It's we're told what we want, and then that unfortunately has an effect on the market. And it's, you know, let's just all just walk into the sea, I think.
Yeah. Well, we need more seas to walk into.
Exactly.
Global warming, we're gonna have more sea to walk into.
I was gonna say, yes.
What a silver lining.
May I suggest most of Canada. The article actually points out the fact that the reason that Nirvana and the reason that NWA and all these people in the 90s started charting and in a major way was because of SoundScan, that it was this really great sort of democratizing way to track what was really selling and not just sort of what was selling in specific, you know, locations. And so, yeah, can't have that. So this is why, you know, we have to now go backwards into this nightmare that we're heading
into. And that's
into,
what I mean by the cultural loss, right? Yeah. Like the idea of the grunge period, and those of us who lived through it can look at that, but it was also emblematic of where the country was at, the overall consciousness. There's so much that's reflected in art. And so if it's this total fallacy of what that is, I'll lead back to, and this it's a really nicely written op-ed as well. It's very passionate. If you want to check it out, in West Side Seattle, but he also states the idea of still buying things count, and where you buy things from count. If you can purchase things from independent stores, either in person or online, you should do so. And I'm also a fan of a sternly written letter. So if there's movies that you want to see that are not yet in Alonzo Duralde's physical media form, then bug somebody about it.
Yeah.
People don't like being bugged. I bet if there was a write-in campaign for some nonsense, that nonsense would find its way to Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm. Be the squeaky wheel you wish to see in the world.
Yes.
We are going to take a quick break and finish venting off mic. But when we come back, Love Lies Bleeding.
Thanks to everyone who contributed during this year's Max Fun Drive. We truly couldn't do what we do without you. With the drive in the rear view, it's time for another proud tradition, our annual charity pin sale. This year, the proceeds for the pin sale will support Vote Riders, a nonprofit dedicated to expanding ballot access nationwide. Members at $10 a month or more can purchase Max Fun Drive pins featuring shows from across the network, and all members are able to buy our network pin design, exclusive to this charity sale. The sale is live now, and it ends Friday, April 12th. For more info, head to MaximumFun.org/pinsale. And thanks again for your support.
Everyone, and welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, now free from traffic. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Mallory O'Mara,
Alonzo Duralde.
And we've been buzzing about today's movie ever since it premiered at Sundance back in January. It's the latest from director Rose Glass, and it stars Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, and Ed Harris. Alonzo, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of Love Lies Bleeding?
Oh, sure. So Kristen Stewart is Lou. She runs a gym in a small town out in the desert somewhere. Breezing through town comes Jackie, played by the extraordinary Katie O'Brien. And they hit it off like a house on fire. But Jackie has dreams of going to Vegas to compete in a bodybuilding competition. And Lou is tied up with her family's sort of mobby local business. And things clash into each other in a very sweaty, lesbian, and steroid-packed way. In Love Lies Bleeding.
May I do a small interjection? Jackie, Katie O'Brien's character, is bisexual.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Just in terms of the bi erasure is nothing anyone here appreciates.
Far be it from me to know. Okay.
Yes. I know. Alonzo is a proud bi cheerer. He loves the bi applause.
Yeah.
Love Lies Bleeding.
Yes.
Oh, all right. So man. I have to paint a picture for all of you here and all of our listeners. Okay. If you don't know me, I'm very strong. I am a power lifter, Lady Beef is basically a part of my personality. I've been a powerlifter for 5 years now. I told some of the hosts earlier, I had this film's poster as my lock screen last year. Once I even heard that, because I'm a big Rose Glass fan, I love Saint Maud. It was my favorite film of 2021. The moment the news came out that she was working on a bodybuilding movie with Kristen Stewart, I checked the internet, and I am not exaggerating, once every week for news on it for years. I've been waiting for this movie. This is a big event for me. I went to see it opening night with my best friend, who's also a lifter. We got yelled at by the Alamo Draft House for all of our horny hooting and hollering. So when I say that, I don't think I've been as excited for a movie as an adult than I was for Love Lies Bleeding. So that's where I'm, that's my point of view coming from.
I really wish you'd ended that with, and then it was so disappointing.
No, there was a moment when we were watching where my best friend Emily, who is also Evie's girlfriend, had to reach over and close my mouth because it was hanging open.
Yes, I heard the closing mouth story, and also the Alamo Draft House, finger waggers, which they weren't ready for how hyped y'all were about that movie.
No,
this is a horny movie for horny people.
No, it's great. I love a connection like this. This was a Sundance film this year, and it was the top of my recommendations list. And then the amount of people who were like, well, fuck you, because nobody could get into it. So I was like, my bad. I should have maybe not put that on my thing of like, try and check this out. Because, yeah, it was... I think there's a lot in this. Like, people who follow indie film, like you said, Rose Glass's first film, Saint Maud... I do encourage people to check out. She has such a strong style and voice. This is a second film. Is so bold and really cements what she's doing as a visionary of sorts. Like, it's super stylistic and cooked in ways that are referential to everything from noir to, like, erotic thrillers. There's just all sorts of things. But it is very much her own... device and storytelling. There were like every other thing that was like an insert shot, or she had like aerial shots of where cars were driving, and I was like, oh god, that's gorgeous. What a dumb thing to think is gorgeous while still caring about story so much. So I'm really excited about her as an artist and the paths she's choosing to explore. And this is also definitely a film, if you don't read anything about it, just go see it. It will not be good if you read it, because this is very much this is in the hands of how it's being told and how the performances are feeding into that kind of storytelling. Because you could read these and be like, well, that's dumb, right? Like, either it's like, oh, cool, generic poor people where every other person's abused and the other ones are all criminals, or... you're getting something really unique and different.
Yeah,
which is,
there's an intentionality going on here where you just, this is confident storytelling. This is, for a second film, I think it's really extraordinary because, you're right. The disparate pieces of this movie on paper sound like movies that you have walked out of at the Sundance Film Festival. But, this is not that. This is, the way that she's telling it, the way the performances are being given. At first I was like, we are going really nuts on the... I thought that she was maybe kind of pushing the sort of poverty angle, and then I realized, oh, it's the 80s. Oh,
it's the 90s. The only thing that really nods to the time is Dave Franco says something. He's walking Jackie through the shooting range at the beginning,
and he talks about, like, Die Hard.
Everybody came in after Die Hard, or whenever Die Hard came out, maybe late 80s. Yeah. It's right then, but that's the only thing that kind of places it in a time and place.
Like, when he said that line, I was like, okay, that's why everything looks the way it does, because this is not now, this is then. But it is some big swings, which we may or may not divulge during this discussion, but they land in a way that you're just like, oh, okay. Yes, you knew that was going to be like a reach, but your arms could handle that reach. I got that metaphor died on me, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh, no, I loved it. Your arms could handle that reach. That's poetry, baby.
I also want to point out, there's another really special way that this movie is super unique, and I know I sound like a broken record here, but as a student and a lover of lady beef, you don't see a lot of this in film. I mean, notably, like a lot of the like female sports movies and shows, A League of Their Own, Glow, all these women are pretty svelte. Even the action stars in the 70s, like in the 80s, you don't see built women. And She-Hulk, very disappointingly, all of those muscles were CGI. I know every female lifter I know was brokenhearted when they made that announcement. Most of the time when you see women that are bulky and strong, it's like Trunchbull and Matilda. It is a parody. It's something that's ugly and silly. So from a Lady Beef standpoint, but also a bisexual standpoint, seeing a woman that is straight up jacked, and not jacked in like a skinny way, like straight up taking steroids, will rip your head off, but also shown in such a sexy, desirable way. Like the scene where I'm pretty sure the scene where Em had to close my mouth was when she was getting a protein shake licked off her neck. Like it just it's funny to laugh at, but at the same time I was like, I have never seen this. You just don't see women that are straight up ripped in a like a regular ripped way that you want to bone, you know, movie wants you to want to bone them.
Yeah. Honestly, the only example that comes to mind of a genuinely yoked woman who is held as an example of like the ultimate form of feminine sexiness is Darla in Napoleon Dynamite. When he's like, you think I go home to Darla every night and da 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 da, and he's like, she's the goddess, and I was like, you do it, man. No, I agree with you, and I also rose glass does a really unique thing of I don't know the right term with it because it's not really sort of gender based, but it kind of is in terms of what you're getting from masculine, feminine presenting within this couple, that the Katie O'Brien character, who's the bodybuilder, is also presented as the femme. She has this like very curly wig. She wears pastel colors exclusively. She's got like, always has like sort of cleavage and her little belly bare and
a lot of leg.
Yeah,
a lot of quad.
Ooh. Oh yeah.
But then Kristen Stewart's character named Lou, you get Lou and Jack, they're already doing little things with that, but she's very much the more mask one. Like she is wearing your sort of baggy jeans, but she's also the scrawny one. So they've twisted up a lot of dynamics that can be shorthand in other stories, more conventional or more heteronormative or whatever. And just that twist was exciting for me of, oh, I'm not trying to have like a replication of hetero standards for this one's the big, strong protector and this one's the nurturing feminine. Mm. You know, there's really fun little flips happening. And yeah.
I have a practicality question that Mallory and or Iffy can tackle here. And obviously the rule is like, you know, especially for like dude film critics, you never talk about women's bodies because that's just like, too many people did it the wrong way for too long, and so you just don't do it. But I think this actually is sort of a plot point here in that you see Katie O'Brien's physique like change, at least it looked that way to me over the course of the film. I've also seen documentaries about like all those sort of like, you know, the supplements that you see advertised in the back of Men's Health where they take the before and after picture on the same day. It's just a question of somebody like pooching their belly out and slouching as opposed to like, you know, sucking it in and flexing. So like, do we think that there was some sort of order of shooting in which like she changed the way her body was shaped, or is it all about angles and outfits and Whatever.
And there is a CGI component.
Yeah, too. I think it's a little column A, a little bit of column B. I could ask her biggest cheerleader, Kylie, her wife, and see if I can get an answer before the end of the pod. But typically, like if I was doing this, if I was shooting a short where I was supposed to be this dude, I would bulk and get the size first, because like a lot of times I have a lot of friends who have done bodybuilding competitions, and to get that like that tightness, that vascularity, which is your veins popping out, and to look that shredded, you have to like completely cut like your carbs, then carbo load right before the show so that it makes your veins pop out. So it's like a very like,
and stop drinking water.
Yeah, it's like a very technique. So I think it would be easier to get to that point, shoot all that stuff, and then go off of it and soften up as you shot the rest of the stuff. Mm.
Okay.
I actually think that's one of the things I loved about the movie is that they chose bodybuilding specifically instead of powerlifting, Olympic lifting, strong woman, whatever it is, because this is a sport that's meant to be looked at. Like, Rose Glass is throwing this in your face. Like, not, it's not just that she's strong. This whole purpose of this is the physique, is the aesthetic, is to be looked at. And I love it. It almost feels like, this is a very weird film connection, but it almost feels like the Greasy Strangler to me, and the way that the testosterone of that she is taking in this movie has a very similar role in the, like, especially supernatural wise, in the film that the Grease and the Greasy Strangler does, is that the more she takes it, the more she is like taking on this masculine juice, I guess you call it, you know, things start changing for good and for ill. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of supernatural things that happen at the end, which I personally love. They're really big swings. But it's the choices that were made by Rose Glass are so brilliant, I think.
Yeah, I think the other element that helps all of it, and I agree, I'm pretty sure, Alonzo, in your description, you said how just Katie O'Brien is stupendous in this. We are a family here that already loves Kristen Stewart and see her as like an incredibly accomplished talent. But Katie O'Brien, newer to a lot of people, I saw her in The Mandalorian, where it's such a different, like she's in like a military suit and covered up and super mask and just night and day. And the two of them together have such exquisite chemistry. Mm-hmm. We've definitely talked about that in different formats of the show, of like, you can't fake that. Like, there's either people spark and are comfortable and hot with each other. And there's a lot of hotness to this, which was also welcome. I think sometimes it's another perfect example too, of it's hotness with two women that feels candid, and you're looking in and you're like, oh yeah, I'm in this is hot, yet is still is not lascivious. Like, it's, you know, it's that whole thing of who made this, who did they make it for, and what is their hotness meant to convey. And so much of it is this very incendiary connection between these two people, and why they will go to such extremes to keep their relationship going. I also want to shout out the casting all around, phenomenal. Ed Harris, born to be a dirtbag. Who knew? His whole life, we were like, when is he going to get his proper dirtbag hair? Here it is. Dave Franco, yep, the Franco I want to see, and the Franco I want to see getting what he deserves. Jenna Malone should be cast as Kristen Stewart's sister for the rest of her life. Like, they are such... Ingo actually texted me that, and it's so true. Like, they are such good matches for spark and for complexity. Like, what Jenna Malone has to convey for this character that is both something you've seen before, but also you're getting like a very particular read on it, is she does great stuff. And Mikhail Baryshnikov's daughter, yes. Anna Baryshnikov, who plays Daisy with the worst fake teeth you've ever seen in your life. Yeah, I just,
but those are period teeth.
Period teeth, maybe. Yeah, those are.
There was some medicine that like children were given that did that to their teeth.
Well, what I liked about the teeth too is that I feel like that type of character would, you know, when you're trying to be like, oh, this is the weirdo kind of person who is XYZ, And I feel like that character can often be either shown in a weird way because of their size or you know, like I don't know how many times on this pod I've been like, this person is presented as ugly and I find them attractive. But I think the jacked up teeth and every, you know, the energy about them, I was like, oh yeah, this person, I definitely just see why someone is like, I'm good. But then also when you see that, that nice chubby body with a good butt, you're like, yeah, this isn't, you're not lying to me.
She, honestly, I was like, you know, wash that girl's hair and give her like a chloride strip. She'd be a babe.
Look, I already said, but good butt, you know?
Exactly. It fully is that idea of, the second you meet her character, you're like, oh God, I do not want to be alone in this room with her. Like, she absolutely nails this specific thing. And there's something interesting there too, that, you know, built into this small town, there's no part of this has any interest in homophobia. They're like, we got other weird stuff to be telling. Like, that is not this story. It may be this weird time in this small town. There's one, lifter at the beginning who like makes a sort of disparaging comment about Kristen Stewart.
Right.
But beyond that, like, her dad doesn't care. There's like this natural love triangle with like three women. Well, no, it's a love line and then a single dot on the side of it.
Yes.
Right. With the three women, but there's no guy trying to come in, well, which I also again, found
this
pretty
is,
novel.
The female gaze of this film, I think, it benefits so much in that, you know, you've seen movies about, like, sexy women sexing it up that are clearly designed to be like, fellas, am I right? And then ones where you actually have a woman behind the camera who is capturing it in a way that she's mainly interested in making sure the women in the audience are digging it. And if anybody else does, that's nice too.
Which they are.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. So I always appreciate the difference. And this movie is definitely giving you, you know, a woman who gets it shooting all this.
Yes.
I feel like I've always say with things like queer content, feminism, what all the representation we're looking for is that finally we're moving into beefy lesbians 2.0, where, you know, before there was such a push to get representation and we have to make everyone heroes and shown in a good light. It's like, all right, cool. Now that we got that out of the way, we can have our dirtbag, shitty ass fucking lesbian. Like, that's one of the things that I love the most about this movie is that and the final scene, which is such a banger, really underscores that these women are both bad people. Like, this is not a movie that is interested in redemption in any way. These women are not like finding hope and salvation and making each other better. They're horny for each other. They love each other, and that's what matters. Like, this feels to me like we're finally starting to see like queer versions. Like, this movie reminded me of Wild at Heart, True Romance, Natural Born Killer. Like, nice. Those kind of romance movies where you're like, yeah, both of these people are awful and I would hit them with my car if I could, but they're both beautiful and they have crazy chemistry with each other. Like, I love it.
Redemption arc, who needs it?
Yes.
No homophobia, no redemption, beef and horniness. That's what we want, folks.
Yes.
There's your poster glued.
Vote.
Yes,
vote.
The way we vote for things on this pod is screen it being the highest, stream it being the next level, and skip it being self-explanatory. So what's everyone voice? Who wants to start?
Screen it. Oh my God. Get all of your beefy friends, all of your gay friends, get your neighbors, your grandparents, everybody that has to go see this movie.
Also bring your chubby or your scrawny straight friends. There's something in here for everybody to enjoy. I loved this so much, and I also see it as something that will be a very fun movie to rewatch and explore with people. It has darkness to it, certainly, but it's just such a movie, and it's a really fun view. It's taking on a lot of dark, perverse stuff, but you are like, there's no heroes in this, but you're still cheering for people, yes, which is crucial.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a screen it as somebody who would only go into a gym if I were like recording a hostage video. I was thrilled by the chances this movie was taking. I loved the central couple and yeah, they're terrible people, but you still want things to work out for them because they're so damn charismatic. See this movie.
Yeah, that leaves me. And I think that is a very clear screen it for me. I love everything. I think it's genuinely one of the best movies about bodybuilding out right now, because I think that its backdrop, even though it's like a backdrop in the film, it really kind of like captures the psychology, I feel, that goes into all of that, and like how, you know, obsessing over your body and then like leaning into steroids and how that can affect you. And even just like the best encapsulation of like roid rage and how it like just alters your approach to real life stuff, you know? So yeah, 10 out of 10. So on that note, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, there's going to be some more Maximum Films. Stay right there.
From the twisted minds that brought you The Adventure Zone, Balance, and Amnesty, and Graduation, and Ethersea, and Steeplechase, and Outre Space, and all the other ones, the McElroy brothers and dad are proud to reveal a bold vision for the future of actual play podcasting. It's called The Adventure Zone versus Dracula.
Yeah, we're going to kill Dracula's ass.
We haven't recorded all of it yet. We will attempt to kill Dracula's ass.
The Avengers M versus Dracula.
Yes, a season I will be running using the D&D 5th edition rule set. And there's two episodes out for you to listen to right now. We hope you will join us. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Bats. I see what you did there. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Mallory O'Mara,
Drea Clark,
and Marissa Flaxbart. Producer Marissa, to you. And I'm here with a movie quiz today. I'm calling this quiz A Title You Can Sing Along To. And I think it might be kind of hard, so we'll see. Just like in the Itadic today, we had a little bit of music of vibe, coincidentally. The quiz has a music vibe too, inspired by the fact that for like the past several weeks that this movie's been out, maybe even before then when we were talking about it a lot, I have had a song by the band Fuel called Hemorrhage, parentheses, in my hands, stuck in my head. Are you guys familiar with this song?
No, but I know the Thompson Twins have a song called Love Lies Bleeding.
Well, maybe they were covering the Thompson Twins. I don't know that music history.
Well, Elton John sings it in like one of the songs on Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. It's a phrase that's knocked around for a while.
Iffy, Mallory, can you help me out here? You guys know this song? Is it just me?
All I know is Love Lies Bleeding is a kind of flower.
Oh.
Wow. Okay, well, now I'm going to have to sing. I have no choice. The song goes, love lies bleeding in my hands again.
Oh, yeah.
Like a grunge. So, you know that song?
That sounds
uncle. All of a sudden, I'm remembering this song.
And I watch as you turn away.
My shirt that has the sleeves cut off is giving me away.
This song, I don't even care about this song, but it is in my mind. I think it must have been like whenever I was in high school or whatever. It's like in there. Anyway. Wow. So now we'll see how well you guys remember lyrics to songs. There are a lot of movies that have song lyrics or often song titles that their movie titles are taken from. I was trying to be really clever and find stuff that was like secret lyrics that weren't the title. But for the most part, what I've got for you today is movies whose titles are from songs.
Okay.
Okay. So here's what
we're
going to do.
The answers?
No.
I'm not going to make you do that. I can't spring that on you. I would love as much as I'm sure the audience would love that, and I would too. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you two pieces of information. The first is about the song, when it came out and who popularized it. And then I'll tell you the year that the movie came out and somebody that was in it. Okay? I think you might need all this information. But why don't we go ahead and say, buzz in as soon as you know.
So do we yell the name of the movie or are we yelling like, you know?
Let's yell the name of the movie.
Okay.
Let's yell the name of the movie just to speed things along. I got a long list here. I'm not going to be able to get to them all.
I have two movies in mind.
Thank you to my coworkers at MaxFun HQ that helped with lots of suggestions for this quiz. All right. The first one, the song came out in 1946-47, popularized by Edith Piaf. Hmm. The movie came out in 2007.
LaVie and Rose.
LaVie and Rose is the one. The song came out in 1961. It's by Ben E. King.
Stand by me.
Stand by me.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, lots of old people. Yeah.
I would have had that one. All right, I had that one in the chamber.
Yeah. Okay. The song came out in 1968. It's by the Beatles. The movie...
Yesterday.
I don't know what... I think that was before 1968. Oh. The movie came out in 2022. It was directed by Rian Johnson.
Oh, Glass Onion.
It stars. There you go.
Oh, jeez. I was like, Knives Out? Oh, 2022.
Yesterday, I don't know. I thought that was too easy. I don't know. This is my own. I make up the rules.
That's fair.
Okay. Here's a weird one song-wise. This song came out in 1935. It was popularized by Francis Langford in a movie from that year called Every Night at 8. The movie came out in the year 2000. It was directed by Wong Kar-wai.
Oh, In the Mood for Love.
That's a song?
That's right. I'm in the mood for love.
Oh,
simply because you're near me. I did not think there was going to be this much singing involved.
Hey, honey, when you're near me, I'm in the mood for love.
Now we have to pay the licensing, Alonzo.
Sorry, right. Oh,
I'm sure she changed a note or two
the
in there,
Francis
right?
Langford estate is going to come after us.
Oh, you don't want them after you, man.
Yeah. Bad news.
Okay. The song is 1988, In Excess. The movie...
Suicide Blonde? Nope, that's not a movie, sorry.
The movie is 2012. It was directed by William Brent Bell.
In Excess. All I can think of is...
I think this is a movie that was famous for not actually having an ending.
Hmm.
If that helps, it's a horror movie.
The Kick Inside?
Say it out loud, extra loud at home if you know. What did you say, Alonzo?
The Kick Inside? No.
So
the
close.
The Devil Inside.
There you go. The Devil Inside.
I was going to get there eventually.
Ah, oh, I need you tonight.
What?
Dang it.
Is that the song?
No, I was agreeing with you.
Okay.
It's in there.
Am I right? That's the one that didn't really end?
They tell you to go to a website. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Spoilers for the Devil Inside.
Just a big QR code.
Seriously, no. I went opening hilarious. Night and people were like, boo.
Wow. Yeah. Haters.
They were right.
I have so many more, but I'm only going to be able to read a few more, okay. I'm sure. Okay. This song was originally written in 1932, but the most popular version is probably like Nat King Cole. The movie is from 1973, and it was directed by Peter Bogdanovich.
Hmm.
Paper Moon?
Paper Moon is the song, yes. It's only a Paper Moon.
Right. I thought we were going to do Unforgettable.
That's truly what came to my mind.
There were so many choices.
There wasn't room for anything else.
Oh, like, yeah, half of John Hughes' movies are named for songs.
How about one that the song came out in 1963? It's by Andy Williams.
Hmm.
The movie came out in 2020. And one of the stars, you guys, is Kristen Stewart.
Summer something?
2020?
It's, and I will say that this title is not the title of the song. It is in the lyrics.
Not underwater.
And it's one that Alonzo should
I was
get.
Like, when did Personal Shopper
come out? Personal Shopper, water than
do you know any Andy Williams songs, Alonzo, that are near and dear to your heart?
I mean, most famous for Moon River, which is from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
What if I tell you that the other star with Kristen Stewart was Mackenzie Davis?
Oh, the holiday one? The
Oh, Happiest Season?
Alonzo.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, I call an audible on that one. He did It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, and he does It's the Holiday Season, but he doesn't have a song called Happiest Season.
Well, isn't that part? I know, but it's part of the lyrics. It's the happiest season. Ooh,
wow. Okay. Yes. Granted.
Yeah, you showed him.
There's no other reason that enough. Movie would be called Happiest Season. Ooh, that rhymed. All right. I'm gonna end with an easy one. I'm not even halfway through this list, you guys. But oh, I guess I made a Letterbox list of these movies, so I can make that public on my Letterbox.
Awesome.
Flaxbart is my Letterbox.
You can tell that Iffy and I have very different music tastes. From what this is.
I like that you say that. I want you to know I don't before listen 1990. To these Yeah.
Well, Iffy, you might get this one. Okay. Although everybody will get this one because I think it's easy. Okay. The song came out in 1988.
Okay. My birthday.
And the artist is N.W.A.
Okay. Is it Straight Outta Compton?
I'll let you. It is Straight Outta Compton. Yeah. I didn't even tell you the year the movie came out. 2015.
Because it's about Gary. You didn't get that
well,
one.
Well, so was LaVeyon Rose.
I know. I almost called it Fuck the Police. So, you know, I could have failed that one.
Coming in 2027.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Thank you guys for playing along with my hardest quiz ever that I had a lot of fun with.
You did good.
Thanks for letting me sing. All right. Bye.
And I mentioned 1990 only because, you know, to underscore, I'm fucking old. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
I do, because I want you to know that a movie came to mind and I was like, well, this is connected and it's definitely a movie I love, but it's also not necessarily for everyone. And that movie is indeed Michael Bay's best motion picture, Pain and Gain. 2013, Mark Wahlberg, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Anthony Mackie. It is based on a true story of absolute idiots. It is, if you're like, man, I wish I could see those guys be super roided up, absolute morons, and then I want to arm them and have them set up a whole extortion ring. It is so fun and stupid. And I'm not a woman accustomed to enjoying Michael Bay motion pictures. I've had a few others, but Pain and Gain is definitely my favorite, and it is such a wild, stupid thing. And the meathead shirts are on point. Find me a t-shirt in this movie that hasn't been ripped in the stupidest way, and I'll give you $5. It's currently on Paramount Plus and available for rent. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's bloody stupid. And a nice male accompaniment to Love Lies Bleeding.
And when Mr. Bay hits, he hits. So, you know.
My staff pick is a movie that I admittedly have not seen, but it tied into this one so well. And it gives me a chance to sort of vent again about the deficiencies of streaming. George Butler, very famously.
I know exactly what you're going to say, and I'm so excited.
George Butler in the late 1970s gave us Pumping Iron, which is the documentary that put Arnold Schwarzenegger on the map. And if you want to watch that movie, it's streaming in a whole bunch of places. If, however, you want to watch the 1985 sequel, Pumping Iron 2, The Women, you just got to go to YouTube and grab it. And I used to be very, oh, no, you can't, because the piracy and the fuck it. If they're not going to make it available, go to YouTube and watch it. And I don't care if nobody gets paid. Movies need to be accessible to the viewing public. And for lovers of lady meat out there, this is the documentary for you, I believe. So Pumping Iron 2, The Women.
Okay, I have seen it. I do own a copy of this movie. There is a place that you can buy a digital copy of it. I'm obsessed with this film. It is absolutely wonderful. It is, it's very different from Pumping Iron, but it's also so, so good. Again, I'm just co-signing everything that you just said. I was going to talk about Pumping Iron 2, but I also really want to bring up keeping the Lady Beef train going. Folks, if you are interested in movies like Love Lies Bleeding that are dark and twisted and horny and also have strong women, you have to watch My Animal. Came out last year. It is about, like, this movie is so in my wheelhouse. I watched it with a friend of mine and we had to stop 10 minutes in because he was like, did you make this movie yourself? It is about a powerlifting, hockey-playing, lesbian werewolf woman. And it is, the sex scenes in that are, it's just magnificent. It is female director. I believe it's Jacqueline Castell.
Castell. It was a Sundance film. Yeah.
It was my favorite movie of last year. It is so fucking good. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on this podcast.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you are.
I had to underscore.
Yeah.
It is. It's just magnificent. It is a perfect companion film to Love Lies Bleeding.
Ooh. That is maybe even a better tonal fit than Pain and Gain. One could say. Yeah.
And my animal is available for rental in all the places.
Yes. Yeah, my pick was going to be that movie that Mallory said, even though I didn't see it because I knew it was the perfect fit. So I was also going to do a blind pick, but Mallory said it, so I don't have to. So it is a twin pick, and I'm proud to twin pick with her, and I'll do it again if I have to.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah, brother.
I'm actually really proud that I've only said hell yeah, brother one time during this entire podcast recording.
We can get in as many times as
I say hell yeah, brother, possibly 50 times a day. Yeah.
We're proud of you, too.
Look, we do what we have to, you know? We do what we have to.
I'm trying to restrain myself.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
Yes, indeed. Oh, man. All right. Well, you know, I guess it's time to say before we wrap things up, we want to thank everyone for making this year's Max Fun Drive a big success. Not only did we surpass our network-wide goals, but we blew past our show's milestone goals, too, which means there's a whole bunch of cool content headed your way. And also, thank you to Mallory O'Mara. What else do you want to tell the listeners? What should they look out for? What do they need to get pumped for?
When does this come out?
Friday.
This Friday. This Next Friday, the April 5th.
Okay. All right. Well, then I can't tell listeners what I have a new book that is finally getting announced this month, but I think it's happening next week or the week after, so I can't tell people about it, but please keep on the lookout for it. Everything that you need to find from me is at MalloryO'Mara.com. I'm not on Twitter anymore, RIP, but I am on Instagram a lot, so there will be a lot of information about that, but it is another nonfiction women's history action movies are involved. I can't say too much more than that. But if you like Lady Beef and stuff that we're talking about in this episode, this book is for you. I've been working on it for a really long time. I'm really proud of it. And keep an eye on my Instagram for that.
Yeah, I think you should definitely keep an eye on that because I think it's definitely super solid, super good, and I may or may not know about it. But you know, you're gonna be super excited when you do get the chance to hear about it. Oh man! Oh well. Thank you, Dre and Alonzo, for another wonderful show. As always, it's great to ride with y'all. And thank you to the listeners. Thank you for listening. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org or find us on any of our social media channels. All those links are in the show notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about The People's Joker. And go ahead and buckle up and get ready for that. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is also wonderful. Her name is Laura Swisher, and this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
Maximum Fun, a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.